Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
You're back in the House of Mystery, and we are at the interview part of the show. Joining us today is personal story. It's Stephen Sacchi, who's written a book called Savage. It's a journey through the opiate epidemic. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Stephen, let's talk about this. So this is really kind of a very personal experience for you that you've written in this book. What was it that made you actually write this book?
I always wanted to be a writer. I would say like the seed was planted when I was about 18 years old. I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, adapted from Hunter S. Thompson's book.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so first I see the movie, and I'm like, wait a minute, this guy does drugs and he writes books? I got to like read up on this. So I read all his books, and I was like, well, I can do that. And, you know, it turns out that on drugs I really can't write for anything because I'm just all over the place. But once I finally got sober, the final thing was, before I got sober this last time, my girlfriend at the time, she was dumping me, which more or less was one of the reasons why I got sober. But as she's dumping me, there's a Barnes & Noble. So we walk inside, we get coffee, and I just start spewing useless information about authors like William Burroughs and all this, and she's like, are you like well read? I'm like, yeah, I used to read a lot, actually. Well, you know, once upon a time I wanted to be an author. And then I said, hey, I tell you what, if I become a best-selling author, will you take me back? She's like, oh yeah, of course. She didn't, but you know, I wrote the book anyway.
Well, I imagine you might replace her with some other one, so I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, but you know, but what made you choose such a personal subject? Like, this is really about your life, and this you have to open yourself up to a lot of people. And with the current world and the way social media and stuff, you do something like this, you know, you could get a lot of feedback that maybe isn't so pretty. So, what was it about this subject that you wanted people to understand?
Well, first off, it's just the easiest story for me to write because, I mean, I could probably come up with some kind of fiction, but this one would just be easier for me to write down. And, you know, I thought about that, like painting myself in this light and letting the world know who I am. And I just decided to roll the dice and just own it. And hopefully, and so far from the feedback I've gotten, is that it could be helpful to other people that suffer from similar afflictions.
And to say you were an open book in this one is quite an understatement. You didn't really let, you were pretty much put everything on the table. I mean, you even admitted to, like we were talking before, liking NSYNC. So honesty obviously is not going to be an issue for you. And there's this quote that really struck me. You said that there was something poisonous in my soul that ran deep. You mind expanding upon that one a little bit? Like, what did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I was a pretty troubled kid. I mean, I'd be listening to Black Sabbath and almost worshiping Satan. Like, I really didn't have any moral lines that I wasn't willing to cross, like, at all. If you had something I wanted, I took it, and I didn't question it. So there's just like this mischievous entity, more or less, inside me, and it's still kind of there a little bit, just not so much. I'm mischievous. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you kind of born with well, you know, I guess us New Yorkers we're mischievous to begin with, but you know, I think that's, you know, you say it was kind of in you, but you know, the image of a drug user is what I think most people have, and then what you are, your actual background is probably actually vastly different. Like, you didn't really come from a bad family or anything like that, what I think most people would probably think drug users are, right?
Yeah, no. I like I said in the book, I looked like a GQ magazine model.
Ashton Kutcher, right, I think was the one that you pointed out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this book seems to really cover your journey through the opioids and the whole epidemic and stuff. What do you think people in mainstream society that don't really, they're not having this issue, or they're not part of this, they just see it on the news, what do you think everyone gets wrong about it?
Well, I'm not so sure that there's nobody that's attached to it at all. I feel like everybody has at least one family member or one close friend that they grew up with that got into it. And one thing that people get wrong is that, I mean, maybe I am, but most of us aren't really inherently bad people. We didn't wake up one day and say, I want to be addicted to this. In fact, a lot of us, if we would have known that what, because we, a lot of us started, at least in my neighborhood, we started on pills. If we knew that it was practically synthetic heroin, we probably wouldn't have done it. We would have just stuck to the other stuff.
Right. Yeah. Is there a point when, like, because you're a young guy, you're out there having a good time, you're partying and you're drinking and you're doing drugs and stuff. When was the point that you, what was it in your life that made you go, oh my God, I've got a problem?
Well, I always knew I had a problem. I really wasn't in denial about that. I just didn't care. It wasn't until this last time when I got sober that I really started to care. I lost a good girlfriend, and then 2 days after she left me, I showed up to my niece's birthday party. She's 10, and I was a disaster. And I dropped a bag of heroin, but in my cousin's driveway, and it was wrapped with something with my name on it. So there was no, like, plausible deniability. It's like, I'm such a mess that, like, I love those girls more than anything, and I can't even get it together to show up to their birthday party, like, straight. And then a couple days after that, I tried, all right, I'll just drink. I got drunk. I hit on some guy's girlfriend right in front of him. He punched me in the face, and it's just like, all right, that's it. I just cannot do this safely anymore.
So what did you find yourself doing on drugs, let's say, that you kind of felt out of control when you look back on?
I start fights a lot. And I'm not even like some big tough guy, you know. I'm pretty skinny, but like I would always just, if someone just said something in a way to me that I didn't like, I'd start a fight with them. I'd always be looking to steal something. Yeah. And I was very irritable. Like, people would just try and be nice to me, and I would just start an argument over nothing. There's a lot of moments through writing it where I was just, like, cringing. Like, I can't believe I used to think that way.
Yeah, that's kind of where the title of your book comes in, Savage. It takes on multiple meanings, how you were savage and kind of in the way that you were just explaining. And in the book, you know, to feed your drug habit, you got to get money, obviously, and you got to keep getting it. And you were coming up with a ridiculous amount of pretty actually smart schemes. I mean, they were pretty lowly, but they were smart nonetheless. So, I mean, what do you think was the worst thing that you ever did on drugs?
Well, probably the worst thing I ever did was stealing from my mother. But when you talk about the creative things, I think of the Restaurant Bandit chapter where I would dress up as a maitre d' in a shirt and tie, and I would walk up to tables in a restaurant if there was no servers paying attention. I'd make sure that I would hang out by the bar a little bit. I'd scope out the place. And if I saw someone paying in cash, I'd walk up to the table and be like, "How was everything tonight, folks? Good. Do you need any change?" They'd be like, "Oh, no, it is all yours." And, you know, I walk out with it. And I did this for 6 months straight, Sunday through Saturday. I feel like Governor Cuomo now, just holding the restaurant industry completely hostage. Because I was on the news, they were looking for me. I was more of a mystery to them than D.B. Cooper. Luckily, this was 12 years ago, so the statute of limitations are over. I looked into it. I got away with it scot-free.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. And you also, honestly, you also might be the kind of like the luckiest son of a bitch on earth. The dumbest, but definitely the luckiest also at the same time with some of the stuff that you had. I mean, I think the one thing was when you were running from the cops, you jumped onto subway rails and was between cars or underneath cars and you didn't electrocute yourself.
Yeah. I went under the train.
Yeah, go into that story running a little bit.
Well, what happened was I was drinking on the train. Now, usually I was smart enough, like if I was drinking publicly, I would put it in a coffee cup. But the Irish side of my family was over, so I was already inebriated when I left my house. And I get on the train, there's two metalheads, and I'm getting into an argument over them because I'm more passionate about spandex wearing 80s metal bands, and they were like with Metallica and Megadeth, and I'm trying to explain to these kids that Motley Crue was really a little bit more hardcore. I mean, if you look into, like, their personal lives. So, you know, they're just rolling their eyes at me, and this old woman, she looked mortified. I know for a fact that she was the one that called the police because this officer, he knew exactly where to find me. I was in the second-to-last car. So he pulls me out. He tells me to sit down. And then he goes to the last car to see for, like, more delinquents or something. So I said, to hell with this guy, and I just start running. But then there was another cop at the other exit, and he's just waving at me, thinking he's cute. So I look around, and I realize I could squeeze under the cars. Where the two cars meet, there's, like, enough opening that I could crawl underneath. So I crawl underneath, and then I start running towards the other train station, and I'm thinking, I'm not looking back. I'm just booking it. And I'm thinking that they see that I ran in the direction that I ran. So there's like this wooded area. I can't go completely through. Like I'm not free because there's a big fence with barbed wire at the top. But I dive into the bushes, the thorny branches. It looked like I got into a fight with Wolverine. And then I look behind me and they think that I'm hiding under the car. They didn't realize that I popped out on the other side. So they're there with flashlights and they're like, "Who is this guy? Houdini?" They held the train for an hour, and I just sat there and laughed at them. And then when they left, I started going up the tracks, and I was trying to, like, find a way out that wasn't without going all the way to the next train station because I was fairly confident they'd be waiting for me there. So there was this plaza that they were building, and I hopped the fence over there. There was an overnight guy. I told him the story, and he was just like, "Man, you run from the police? Why ain't you just say so?" And I just waited for my friend to pick me up.
And I think the whole time when you were waiting in the bushes, you said you were like you were blowing coke looking at them. I think you one thing you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where the dumbass part comes in also.
Yeah, that's why I ran, because, you know, like, public drunkenness, that's just like a summons. But if they would have found the coke, then I was going to jail, and I really didn't feel like going. So I ran away. I snorted that while I was waiting for them to finally give up their search. And, yeah, here we are. But the best is that I found that cop again. See, he's not a real cop. He's a Metro cop. They deal with, like, the train stations and all that. I had an issue with this guy even before that, because my brother, when he was 17, in high school in New York, they give you these student Metro cards. So, like, you know, right.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And the bus and the subways is free for you. But he turned 17, he got his car, so he didn't need it anymore. And I was commuting into the city for work every day. So I'm like, give me your student Metro card. Boy Scout Metro cop sees me doing it, he confiscates. Then the next time I see him is the train incident. Then years later, I run into him again. I did this crazy maneuver driving, and he wanted to give me a ticket. I talked my way out of it, but as he's handing me my license, he's like, you look kind of familiar. I'm like, I just got one of those faces. And with a stroke of luck, he finally realized who I was.
Wow. So, when you look back of it all, what do you think? Did you have any terrifying things happen to you?
Oh, probably the overdoses. Not so much the first one, because I was just in a weird headspace. And but the second one, like for some reason, it took 2 Narcan shots to wake me up, and just like the feeling I felt when I woke up was just like it was pretty spooky. I didn't have, like, a white light near-death experience or anything like that, but just the way I felt when I woke up was just scary. It's like I knew that I came this close to dying.
Is that what you finally got you onto the path? No.
My thinking after that was like, all right, well, I won't do heroin, but I'm still going to drink. But then I would get too drunk, and then I would do it again anyway.
Wow. So what did you actually do? How did you get off the drugs? Because it says here that you were sick and tired of things, but you had lost faith of ever being able to quit. So what was the turning point? Like, what made you do it? Like, as in, how did you do it?
Well, I had been to detox and rehab plenty of times, but I had been through them enough to know that I didn't need it anymore. I knew that I wanted it bad enough. I just went to 12-step meetings and kind of kicked cold turkey. And also, I didn't have any health insurance, so I just kind of you know, manned up and went to meetings and stayed on the path.
So what do you think of what do you think of the justice system as it goes toward drugs in the States? Do you think how could it be changed where people would have a better chance of getting off rather than just doing what you did?
Well, I'm not really too emotionally attached to what they do either way. But it seems like decriminalization would be better, because if you look in Amsterdam, they'll call you a junkie if you smoke weed too much. They really don't have much, like, as far as the citizen, they're not really, once you take away that taboo and the criminality of it, it's not as prevalent. Like, tourists, they'll go there and they'll get blitzed, but for the most part, the citizens don't really have the kind of issues that we have.
Right. No, I agree with that. I've got that European, Canadian background. So a lot of things like heroin are not, they're not criminal anymore. And it's better to put the money in helping someone than just arresting them. It doesn't do anything, you know.
Yeah, I know it's a scary thought for a lot of people to try that here, but we know how the other way works, you know?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't make any sense, because why arrest someone just because they've got cocaine or heroin? Arrest them if they're doing something wrong, you know, assaulting someone or killing people and stuff like that. But to actually do the drug, I don't get why that should just be a, as long as you're old enough, you know, when a six-year-old's doing it. But wow, it's crazy.
Well, it seems like we're kind of going into that direction state by state.
Yeah, it's slow.
20 years from now, it'll be totally different.
Well, hopefully. Hopefully a lot of things will be. But, you know, we have to wait and see. Wait and see. So what do you want people to get out of the book? So if someone wants to buy your book, pick it up, and they read it, what do you want them to take home after they've read it?
That recovery is possible. Like, the most important thing for me, like, from, like, a sentimental standpoint, is that, like, hopefully someone who's struggling could read this and be like, all right, I can do it. But my main thing is that they laugh, because I want it to be funny.
You had some great stories in there. I was bawling a few times. I think one story was with you ended up doing drugs with Woody Harrelson's brother. You know, and I lived in L.A. also. So when you kind of live there and you go into Hollywood, you can't not see pretty much a celebrity. I mean, did you ever end up getting high with anyone, with any other famous people?
No, I don't think so. I was high around famous people, but he's the only one I got high with.
And, you know, kind of trailing back to what Alan was saying before, and, you know, you've mentioned a few of the despicable acts that you've done, you know, you're talking about stealing from your mom, and I don't want to talk, you know, let the listeners know some of the other stuff. I'll let you speak for it, but some of the other stuff was pretty rough, maybe even worse than that, actually. Do you think, kind of a two-part question, do you think you could ever make up for those despicable acts, and, you know, what type of regret level do you have now?
Well, I don't lose too much sleep over it. What's done is done. I don't think I could ever make amends for everything in my lifetime, even if, like, you know, I gave up every penny that I made. I don't think I'd ever catch up. But we'll see how the book sales do. Maybe.
How are you making amends now, these days?
Well, I haven't really done many financial amends, but and a lot of the people I would have to make amends to are dead or there's just no way of finding them. So my thing is once I could afford to make some financial amends, I'm probably going to donate it to a children's hospital because adults don't really deserve anything. I got a soft spot for kids. So, yeah, because usually what we do in 12-step groups is if we can't make, let's say, like, we stole $100 from somebody and that guy's dead, you would donate it to a good cause. St. Jude's Children's Hospital, that's where I would put it. Because I love kids.
Wow. Kids and animals. The innocent.
And hopefully you don't have any out there with all the drugs that you've done. Hopefully, you know, there are some nights I'm sure you don't remember.
No, I would know.
So where do you want to see yourself in 10 years? Where do you want to go with this now that you've turned the corner?
Well, I once explored stand-up comedy a few years ago, and now that I understand how the creative process really works, because I was mostly winging it. The first show, I did pretty good. Second and third, not so much. But now that I understand how the creative process works, I really want to get into that. And my ultimate dream is to just open up a restaurant, because I've worked in the restaurant business since I was a kid. I love it. There's something about it that I love. I just don't want to wait tables.
Well, I was going to say, you could just collect the money.
Yeah, like, I'll help out, but really, I'm just hanging out.
Yeah. No, I know. Well, that's pretty interesting. Wow. So now, where is your book available? And do you have a website now for people who can come find you? Or
no, not yet. I'm not really, like, computer literate. I'm learning as I go. But the book is available on Amazon. You would type in Savage, Stephen with a P-H, Zachy, S-A-C-C-H-I. And then it should come up. It's the big red book with a needle on it.
Well, we're going to have that on our website as well, you know, so anybody that listens, they can just do one click and they'll find you, and that'll be up for quite a while, a couple of years, so that'll help out, hopefully.
Wow. I appreciate that.
So are you going to keep on writing, do you think, now? Or
well, this woman that helped me edit it, she suggested that I should. And at first, I was going to, like, work closely with her on a fictional story, but I don't have the bandwidth for that right now because I'm trying to market the thing. So I'm not gonna close the door on that completely, but there's just other things that I want to explore first.
Yeah, it's a process. It takes a lot of work to get things going and get things out there, especially if you're trying to do a lot of it yourself. It's a lot of work.
Well, I'm having fun with it. What I'm doing on social media is, like, putting up funny videos and whatnot. In fact, today I just went to the city because I wanted to get a purple suit so I could dress up like the Joker and do all kinds of crazy Joker skits. Because every time I put up a funny video, I get, like, an influx of people saying, oh, I bought the book.
Yeah, it all works. It's a crazy world. Has the sort of the way the world is now, you know, COVID and all this stuff, has that sort of affected you any?
Not really. I mean, to tell you the truth, this, and don't take this as me, like, saying the wrong thing about COVID. I mean, my heart obviously goes out to the victims and the people whose businesses have been affected. But for me, it almost feels like a blessing in disguise. Because when I first got sober, I said to my best friend, I was like, listen, I'm going to write a book and either parlay the money from that or some other way, and I'm going to open up a restaurant. And COVID basically is like tailor-made for my dreams to come true, because I was struggling to find the time to finish writing it. And then once quarantine hit, I was able to finish. And also, here in New York, they're closing down all the restaurants, so all my competition, if I open up a restaurant, is gone.
Yeah, you know, things work in weird ways, don't they?
Yeah, I feel like with every setback, there's always an opportunity for success.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You just gotta look at it the right way.
Yeah, you gotta look for it and find it and work it. You know, so what's your influences? Do you have any influences right now, or anybody you want to that has helped you out?
As far as with the writing?
Yeah, with the writing, with your life, just anybody that you kind of look to right now and go, wow, that this person really helped me. Like
Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue, Hunter S. Thompson, and definitely William Burroughs. I loved that book, Junkie. And yeah, as far as writing, I think that would be it. I mean, there's other authors that I've read and like. Things that, like, not stealing from them, but just, like, I could feel, like, an influence coming from them all.
Right.
It's probably been a minute since, it's probably been a minute since someone said Nikki Sixx and William Burroughs in the same sentence. So, God bless you on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Nikki's pretty amazing. He did so much of the writing and so much of the work behind that band that, you know, he was really the soul of that band. So,
oh, absolutely. When I read The Dirt and The Heroin Diaries, that really like kind of solidified. I mean, I read it years ago, but it really like solidified like me saying to myself, "All right, I could do this. Not only get sober, but I could write about this experience."
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Well. This has been an interesting conversation, and I'm glad you had the time to talk to us. The book we're talking about is Savage. It's a journey through the opioid epidemic, and the guest has been Stephen Sacky. Thank you for being here, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.